Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
Welcome back inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema with you guys on a Monday morning. We're ready to continue to look at 2018 draft prospects and roll through. But first, before we do that, Trevor, NHL playoffs wrapped up. NBA Finals added a layer of intrigue. Since we've last been on, a good bit's happened. I know you didn't necessarily want to see the Penguins come out victorious. I obviously did. But did it get you excited at all thinking about what the Lightning can accomplish here? Because
Stacked. And I got to, you know, obviously say congratulations to you and the other Pittsburgh faithful people. I think I tweeted this out last night. I think part of the reason why I just don't like the Penguins is because y'all are so good. And it's just like I'm jealous with it. I said last night, I was like, I hate Matt Murray. And it's 100% just out of jealousy that he doesn't play for my team. Not that Vasilevsky and Lenny are bad, but hockey's great, man. If you don't watch hockey, if you guys are listening out there and you're like, I can't, I'm not watching that soccer on ice sport. Like, it's great, man. Hockey is great. It's so fast paced. It's so fun to follow. It's fun to watch. I know we complain about like commentators and play-by-play people, whether they say stupid stuff in the NFL or even in the NBA. But, like, hockey is such a fun game because Doc Emmerich and a lot of these other play-by-play guys are just – they're talking at a million miles an hour. And once you've watched it plenty, you can start understanding really what's going on, what they're saying. And there's just never a dull moment in it. And I think – I know football podcast, hot take here, but, like, game for game, the NHL playoffs – are the best.
Yeah.
Just like, because even in the first round, man, like you could get a 1-8 upset. Like people don't realize how even the field is with hockey. It's just so much effort and flying around. So it's a blast. I'm already sad that the Stanley Cup playoffs are over, but hockey also has the shortest off season. So I get to watch the Lightning pretty soon, which I'm pretty pumped about.
The parity too is just incredible these days. I mean, almost every in the league does a terrible job of showcasing this, and most fans don't even know this. You get to the playoffs, and if you do just watch the playoffs, you know, you're like, who is that guy? And it turns out he had like 35 goals this season, and he's a star player, but you just don't know anything about him because the league does such a bad job of showcasing those guys. But every team has almost every team at this point has like a real stud, at least one, and there's so much young talent in the league. It's just an exciting time to.
It really is.
With the parity, to see the Penguins go back to back is pretty incredible. Especially the way they were
the first
up
team to
week.
First team to go back to back since the '80s, I think, since Gretzky in the '80s.
In the salary cap era, yeah. I know. I think the Red Wings went back to back in the late '90s.
I think. Oh yeah, you're right. Team. I think they did.
In the salary cap era, the first team. So crazy. With the parity in today's league. Yeah, just really, really nuts. But I definitely think the Lightning fully healthy next season. Right back in the mix. I mean, that's.
I hope, man, because those 2 years they got far and then they couldn't. Like last year when they lost the Penguins in seven, and then the year before that when they ran up against like the Chicago juggernaut, I was just like, please don't let this be the last time we're good for forever, or it'll haunt me. Right. It'll haunt my dreams. So
in the NBA Finals, added a layer of intrigue as well because the Cavs win one, and now it's 3-1, and everybody's getting their takes off.
I'm just gonna say this. We're recording this on a Monday morning. Obviously, it's gonna come out on Monday. They play later tonight. If the Warriors don't win tonight,
it's gonna get real interesting.
Dude, if they don't win, they have to win tonight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Oracle, they've been so dominant there.
Because it's the same situation. It's like the same situation as last year, you know? Where they're playing are flipped, so it's even more difficult for Cleveland. But, like, if you don't win this game, if the Warriors don't win this game, that means they have to go back to Cleveland, which – all momentum's on their side, and really, if you think about Cleveland not blowing Game 3, the series should probably be tied 2-2, so it's basically like they've defended home court. So if they can't win Game 5, they might not win game six, and then literally everything's out the window in game seven.
Yeah. No, I completely agree, and I think that tonight's pivotal for that.
I don't know how the crap we got here, because this Warriors team is one of the best teams of all time.
Yeah.
So.
And it's 3-1 still, and we're probably jumping the gun because of last year. You know, like, if last year hadn't happened, like, no one would care that the Cavs
just
won a game, really.
Yeah, we're probably like, the series is over tonight.
But really, the series should be 2-2, and we could go on for this forever. But the Cavs were better in game three. They blew it at the end, I thought. And this
crazy.
Could easily be 2-2, and we could be headed for seven games. That one game really swung it, I felt like. That was the biggest difference, because the Warriors blew them out the first two games last year too, but they were still very evenly matched teams. It just wasn't indicative of how the whole thing would go. And then, you know, we had game three was the big difference, because then the Cavs went and they won big by double digits in both the next two games. And game three really the big difference between this and last year so far. And the big difference in that game, you could say, was Kevin Durant. But we could definitely talk about that all day. But we got to talk football at some point. And not that that's a bad thing, because football is our jam. That's what we're here for. We're talking about the Notre Dame left side of the offensive line, one of the dominant blocking duos in college football today. Mike McGlinchey at left tackle, who took over for Ronnie Stanley. He was on the right side. He moved over to the left side last year, so experience at both spots. We're talking about him and his play at left tackle last year, and Quentin Nelson, the left guard for Notre Dame, who I wrote up this past week over at ndtscouting.com, a report on him, and then another piece on some of the things he does really well as a run blocker. So some good stuff there if you want to check it out. But when I watched these guys, man, I thought nasty grinders, old school mentality and physicality up front, and they uprooted and displaced so many college defensive linemen in the run game. Especially with double teams, just really when you watch college football players, you want to see them really dominate their level of competition. And I thought that Nelson and McGlinchey in the run game, as especially with gap and power concepts, really thought that they showcased a lot of their ability to just create space at the point of attack. That's not something you always see in the day and age of, you know, kind of some smaller, more athletic, quicker offensive linemen going higher and higher every year.
Yeah, I think I read either yesterday or the day before when I was looking stuff up for this that McGlinchey was the PFF's top returning tackle for a run game grade. So, yeah, obviously he's pretty stout in that area, but, you know, playing left tackle, moving over to the left tackle side, taking over for Ronnie Stanley, it's about pass blocking. You know, that's the way it is. If you want to be a top left tackle, you're pass blocking. That's what it is. You got to be solid all around, but
yeah.
That's kind of what it has to be. And then Nelson, I just know, I knew going into when I was watching his film that he was going to be a mauler, and whew, he's a bulldozer guy. If he gets you into his frame and you get in between his shoulders, it's very difficult for you to get out of it. I also read, doing some just a little background research like I like to do on a lot of these guys, that he benched, I think, 26 reps of 225 when he was a senior in high school.
He plays with that physicality and that edge that you really want, I think, in an offensive lineman. I mean, a powerful guy that's a people mover at the point of attack. Just really does, I think, a nice job of continuing to play with leverage and power to kind of displace people in the run game. I mean, I think that's going to be his calling card entering the league. He must have had 15 finishes against Michigan State where he just pancaked and buried a guy. Just incredible stuff. I mean, the power and the grip strength, he kind of just wrestles you to the ground, but he gets his hands so tight inside that you can't really see much of a hold, and he maintains control and keeps those legs driving, so a player's not even able to pull away from him at all because he doesn't stop his feet. He just keeps keeping you moving back and back and back. And then, I mean, he finished so many blocks. Just talk about a guy who plays with edge and nastiness. I just think that he really brings a lot of traits that NFL teams are going to, and coaches are going to love to watch Nelson play, because, you know, a very bright kid, a very smart kid who's going to pick up on concepts well and going to execute and finish at a high rate. You know, coaches just go crazy for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, something that I wanted to let you touch on, because you are much more of a O-line savant than I am. I can kind of recognize when plays are good and when guys are doing little things with technique, but I know that you're a little bit better explaining this. So make sure that people know that we wonder why McGlinchey returned, right, for his fifth year, because it seemed like he could have very well been a first-round pick in last year's draft because, you know, there was, you know, parity at the top with a lot of those guys. And some people would have had him as their top offensive tackle because of his size and athleticism and all that. So played right tackle, I think, for 3 years or 2 years. I know he started for at least two on the right side. Yeah. Then he pops over to the left for the first time last year, returns to Notre Dame because he said, in his words, I know that there were things that I wanted to get better at that I could improve on after watching my film. Regardless of what grade I got in the NFL mm-hmm. from the NFL Draft Advisory Board, that I knew that I could work on and that I needed to go – that I need to have under my belt before I become a pro. So what does that kind of look like for him going into this year playing at left tackle for the second year? Like what was he like in his first year, just little nuances? Anything that you see from the switch to right tackle to left tackle? Because people don't realize it's more than just, you know, flipping the position in Madden. You know, mm-hmm. you can't just go, I'll put him at left tackle. You know, it's a different kind of game. So what are you looking for him in that aspect?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on who you're matching up against. You're right. I mean, like, it's not like just an automatic thing where, you know, the right left tackle is better than right tackle. You know, it depends on who you're playing against on a snap-to-snap basis. And in the NFL, you could make an argument that right tackles have a harder time than left tackles. Now, the NFL has been putting the better player at left tackle for years, so most of the left tackles at that level are better than the right tackles, but that's not because they, you know, don't have or they have harder responsibilities to take care of on a game-to-game basis. It's just that the NFL has been putting the better player there for a long time, and you know, teams have countered by putting their best pass rushers on the other side. So those are just some of the games that go into all that. But for McGlinchey, definitely the right call to go back. He got a lot of attention, and rightfully so. I think he has some traits that that look pretty good for him in terms of a long-term projection, but he needs to get stronger in terms of his anchor and improving his strike timing a little bit. And he just didn't really seem to stun people much when he was at right tackle with his punch. Like, he didn't seem to gain control quickly, which for a guy who's a pretty dominant run blocker, you know, I don't know if power is an issue so much as placement and strike timing and things like that. I think he really needed improvement in pass protection, and I'm glad he went back. He and Kevin Dodd, back when he was at right tackle, had, you know, back and forth battles all game when they played. And I think Dodd won his fair share of those matchups. So depending on what you thought of Dodd coming out, you know, that will probably determine how you thought of McGlinchey there. And that was kind of indicative of his season. There was some really good moments. There were some down moments. I think his footwork needs work, needs to come along and be developed. I think that he has a lot of the physical traits that you want for a player. Again, but he's listed at 6'8" on their website.
That is huge.
That is huge, and it tends to be too big. Right. If they're, you know, you can't make those blanket statements, you know, every time. But if we look traditionally, I think those guys that have been that tall struggle with leverage and pad level. And NFL Draft Scout has him at 6'7" and an eighth. But even that is really tall, and light too for how tall he is. I think he is going to have trouble with power rushers because of that, and you can see that already on tape. He, when guys get into his chest, when he's mistimes his strikes or doesn't place his hands well, I think he can get worked back a good bit. He also has a hard time with his kick slide. He's got to get out and take away that two-way go for rushers. I think he does a good job stepping down inside from what I've seen so far. He gets beat on the edge too often. So if a guy can go through you and around you on the edge with fair consistency, then I think you've got a lot to work on as a left tackle. So need to see McGlinchey make big strides this season. He identified that about his game already. I think his work ethic and his tools are there. I want to see him make those strides this season and become that the player that his skill set suggests he can, because right now, I think he'll get first round conversation. I don't think he's a first round player right now for sure. But he does do really good things in the run game, and teams won't overlook that either, because that is important. Then I could 100% see him getting the Jack Conklin treatment as a rookie if he doesn't make big improvements. You know, capitalize on what he does in the run game and minimize what he does in pass protection by giving him tons of help, tight end alignments, running backs chipping out of the backfield, things like that. if he doesn't make big improvements in that area. So how he plays in that way will be key, I think. But it's impressive the leverage he's able to get as a 6'7 guy in the run game, at least on double teams and such. I was kind of blown away by the fact that he was that tall, listed that tall, when how low he plays in the run game. But it shows up in pass protection. So is that flexibility there? Does he just not know how to use it in pass protection? Those will be things that we look for, I think, and try to discover about McGlinchey this season.
Do you have an ideal height, weight for offensive tackles that you look for? Just, you know, so people know when you talk about a guy being too tall or a little skinny or something like that. Do you have like an ideal weight like in your head that you kind of would like your tackles to be?
I really don't, to be honest. I mean, I'm pretty open-minded that unless you show something on tape is an issue, then I think, you know, there have been a lot of studies with arm length for tackles that show it can be an issue, but there's differing opinions on that too, but there's been a lot of studies on that too. Joe Thomas is the most significant outlier, but I did hear whispers when I was down at the last Senior Bowl that his measurements were off and that he's not actually as short-armed as...
Yeah, so I read that as well.
That would kind of really add fuel to the fire of the long-armed folks. But yeah, I try not to let that by itself influence me, but when I do see things on tape like I do with McGlinchey, then you start to wonder about it a little bit and wondering about it projecting to the NFL where pass rushers are way better. And that's why I think another hard part about projecting tackles, they are not going to – most conferences and most team schedules, you're not going to see anything close to the level of dynamic pass rushing ability that you'll see in the NFL. You just won't. I mean, the cream of the crop make the NFL, and there's a big drop-off, I think, in a lot of ways between what you get there and what you get in college. I mean, how many good pass rushers have we seen in college that went high in the draft, especially 5, 6, 7 years ago, that didn't do anything in the NFL? I mean, there's so many that ended up, you know, Barkevious Mingo and – Adams and lots of other guys, you know, throughout their careers. And so I think we've seen how difficult that transition can be for a lot of guys. And I think that it's a big projection to go to the NFL. So you have to look at traits and where they end up and the coaching they get. Like Greg Robinson, great traits. Everything you want was there. It just hasn't panned out, whether it's his work ethic or the coaching or whatever it might be. And playing for the Rams, that doesn't help. So whatever it might be, it hasn't worked out for him. But if you look traits-wise and he was in this next draft, I think most people would probably say, you know, if they didn't know, you know, no connection to this Greg Robinson, people would say, this is a guy that's a first-round pick because he had those kind of traits and talent. And it's one you look back on, didn't work out. But I think the process behind picking him was probably a pretty good one. So that's part of the challenge with evaluating tackles, I think, too. But talking about Quentin Nelson, though, and switching gears to the inside, I don't think he's just scheme-limited to, like, gap power stuff either, though. Like, he was asked – I mean, Notre Dame does run a ton of gap power concepts, but he was asked to be a zone blocker, and they ran a decent amount of inside zone, and he executed well even against, like, somebody like Malik McDowell. You know, he reached him a couple times and got his hips around and sealed that off. And so – He offers you a decent amount of diversity. I mean, is he going to be great in space down the field on those deep pulls or on screens and things like that? He isn't like an elite athlete. He isn't Cody Whitehair in space, or he isn't Forrest Lamp in space, or any of the recent guys, trying to use recent names that might, you know, jog people's memories. Ali Marpet in space. He's not those type of guys, I think, but you are still getting a player who's capable in that way, who takes good angles and understands leverage and just thinks the game at a high level. I thought he was good getting to the second level. And, man, when he latches on, it's game over. You don't see power like Quentin Nelson's at the college level a whole lot, I don't think. It reminds me of, like, Gabe Jackson and Richie Incognito to a degree. You know, those kind of guys, I think he'll get a lot of comparisons like that coming out.
Yeah, the Richie Incognito one was one that kind of stood out a little bit to me, because you're right. It's just it definitely pops out at you. And we do think that these guys who are, you know, we get caught up in narratives and we think, okay, well, if this is a bigger player who's a power or who's a strong player, then he's either not going to be able to move well, or, you know, he needs to improve. Like you said, like different schemes of how he blocked. But like, yeah, Quentin Nelson is pretty solid. I watched, you know, the couple games that I was able to watch from the Notre Dame O-line, really just going back and back and forth with their snaps. I thought they ran a fine amount of either zone or gap and power things. So I thought he did pretty well. It is the short arm, powerful kind of thing when I watch Nelson. If he gets you in between his shoulders, you're not getting away. He's right. Probably putting you on his back. But then on the flip side, I do want to say this. I thought Nelson had great communication. I thought that was great. I thought that he recognized where he – because interior linemen, right, a lot of it is helping. Because, you know, if they're only rushing four and you have either five or six people blocking on the line, it's important – how you help in those situations, because that obviously allows you to get the advantage that you have by having more numbers on the line to block. So I thought he did a really great job reading where the blitzes were coming from, where the pass rush was coming from in the pre-snap, and I thought he did a good job of helping out where he needed to. And then I had another point about the one area where I thought that he did struggle a little bit, and this is pretty expected with guards, it is. Some of those longer armed interior defensive linemen, or guys that did stunt blocks, if they were really, really good at like a swim move, they could get their arm up in a position to swim him where his power was useless because he couldn't get into them. And so that's kind of a problem that happens with a lot of different guards. But yeah. It was something I noticed with him a little bit.
Exactly. Where he's going to struggle is he's going to have to learn to harness his aggression and time his strikes consistently well, because if you watch him in pass protection, he doesn't take kick slides. Like, he doesn't take any 45-degree angle sets, nothing like that. He's just jump setting you every single time. I don't know if I saw him take one true pass set. He just comes off the snap, jump sets you, gets his hands right on you, and tries to end it early. And it works for him a lot of the time. But in the NFL, you're going to have to refine that footwork. You're going to have to take those kick slides. Guys are too quick on the inside. Like you said, the long lever guys, even Malik McDowell once got him, you know, and he does not get bull rushed unless he loses that first contact. And it hardly ever happens. But if he misses you with his hands in that first jump set, he then will start to give some ground to you a little bit. But my word, can he drop anchor and reverse the tide. I mean, McDowell had him 2-3 steps back, and then all of a sudden, Nelson just drops his hips, resets his hands inside, and pancakes McDowell. I mean, it was eye-popping power. I mean, you just do not see guys like that, especially against somebody like McDowell that's, you know, to me, I thought was a top 10 prospect in last year's class and has incredible power and leverage for a guy that's his size and height. So I just was really impressed by Nelson's ability to recover in that way, but quicker guys who can get on his edge will take advantage of him, because he comes out with that jump set and that big wide base and he fires his hands. And if he doesn't lock you up right away, or you get on his edge, or you swim him, because you know that quick set's coming, you swim him, he's going to have a tough time recovering because he's just not that type of athlete. And even if you are, I mean, against NFL athletes, you lose that, you know, right away with an aggressive set like that, you're going to have a really hard time making up the ground. And so that's where he can be taken advantage of. It happened a couple times on tape. He's incredibly adept at what he does, so it does not happen that often. But in the NFL, that's where I worry about him in pass protection, because you're right, he fires out off the snap, and if you swim him, or push-pull him even, because his weight's forward a little bit. He's not a waist bender. He just leans forward into contact a little bit, or steps forward into it. You can get him in that regard and get by him clean and clear his hands. It's easier said than done, but I think in the NFL, guys will see it on tape and expect it a lot more. So that is the area of his game to me that still needs work, and why I would say first round grade might be a little bit rich, but I would love to have a guy like that in the second or third, somewhere on day two. You know, I'd probably take him a little earlier than some would, but the pass protection stuff's legit. He's got to figure it out this year, because you're right, the league is all about pass protection. Even if you're a guard, that's a super important part of what you do.
Yeah, no, it's just because of the nature of playing guard, they're not always regarded as first round picks. Just because there's a lot of, it's shorter space, it's it's easier to play when you have shorter space in football. That's just what it's all about. And so for the nature of his position, yeah, it's just tough to break into the first round in general. Got a second round grade from the NFL Draft Advisory Board last year. I assume that if, you know, as long as he stays healthy, which I hope obviously all of these guys do, he's probably looking at the same kind of a grade. I mean, they might even add, you know, you might be a late first, early second kind of guy just because of the nature of the position. But he's going to be one of those top offensive tackles, or sorry, offensive guards, wherever it is when it's all said and done. Like if the NFL doesn't want to draft a guard in the first round, okay. But like he's going to be one of the top guards taken wherever it is. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if he improves in pass protection, he shows that improvement. He can do things in the run game, I think, that are going to carry over and project well to the next level. That
we got to remember him when we get to the combine this year, and like because they do interviews at the same time at the combine. For those of you who don't know, it's kind of like a zoo. Yes. This is my first year at the combine, and they do like 8 prospects at 8 different tables at one time, and then they have the bench press stuff going on at the same time, like right behind us. So like John and I were like going from like interviews to combine stuff to like bench press stuff, and we were just going back and forth with like, we don't want to miss whoever's going to have the most bench. So Quinn Nelson, got to make sure we get him. I don't care who's at the podium.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. He's a tank. He's going to put up some big numbers. I mean, he's a big dude, and he's got just the burly frame and the arm length and everything to project well on that bench. So I am looking forward to that too. But yeah, he's a guy that I think has the tools to really be able to improve what he does. We'll just have to see how that footwork comes along this season, how his sets come along, and how we project that out to the NFL then, because there's a lot on tape. Players are going to start taking advantage of what he does unless he varies his sets up a little bit and does some different things. So, but man, I love him in the run game. I think he's so much fun to watch, and you don't see many college guys finish at the rate that he does. I mean, he just puts people on the ground all the time. It's incredible, and without really getting called for holding or anything like that. So he offers some really impressive things. He'll probably be a favorite of mine no matter where I have his actual grade, how he grades out for me on my new scale and everything. I'll probably bang the table for him type of guy for me because I'm a big fan of his game. So. There you go, kicking you off for the offensive line looks at the 2018 class. We'll come back. We've got a lot of guys to talk about. This is going to be a good class.
It is.
It's like offensive line. It's boring. You know, a lot of people think we're going to keep it fresh here for you this week. So
you got to know the names.
Yeah.
John and I were talking about this before we got on the podcast. Like, it is like doing this stuff, doing your research, getting your foundation, at least just knowing the names is really important if you like the NFL draft, if you like having a full scope of everything that's going on. Because, you know, even if you like the flashier things, you can't go like, oh, they're all first-round guys, and then, you know, you throw some other guys in. We got to know who the other guys are. You know, it'll help you better understand the draft, and it'll help you better understand even the positions that you might like a little bit more than offensive line. So O-line is good. It's healthy to learn the names of the big boys going into the draft class.
That's right, baby. So we'll keep talking about the big boys as we move through the week. We've got some cool things lined up for you, so make sure you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.